Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
The Incomparable, number 644, December 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about the latest Star Wars series, Andor. Not Endor. I had many questions among my family if this was going to be about the forest moon of Endor. It is not. It is about a guy named Andor. And it's not related to the Andorians on Star Trek. Another question that I answered, because that's not Star Wars. It's Star Trek, a different franchise. I am also delighted to have this be the first episode in a very long time to be done entirely in person. Let me introduce the people around this table. We're not going to be doing 30 minutes of tech topics, but to my left, it's John Siracusa.
You sure this isn't about Ewoks? Because you said it's not about the forest moon of Endor, but Endor is also the name of the planet that the forest moon orbits, is it not?
It's unclear. Unclear.
All right.
And if it is about Ewoks, they are playing a long game.
It's a slow burn.
To John's left is, and across the table from me, is my not co-host of this episode, Dan Morin. Hi, Dan.
Jason, if I need to lie, I'm going to need to recharge. Also, I always preferred the sanctuary moon of Endor. I felt like that added a whole different wrinkle in it. And it's possible, by the way, that Brasso is just two Ewoks in like a,
in a trench coat.
Standing on his top.
That sends us in a new direction.
Okay, that sends this whole show in a new direction.
And to my right, it's Tony Sindelar.
Hello, nerds. That's what you want to hear, right?
That's what we want to hear.
Play the hits.
Yep.
That's it.
I'm back on a podcast. I said I'd never do it again, and here I am.
Well, it's good to see you. I'm glad that you are alive. Debatable.
I bring a special energy to this. I'm here. I'm excited to talk about Star Wars. Star Wars is always fun and joyful and wacky and full of hijinks. And what more to bring me back?
Swashbuckling.
Aliens.
Weird yeah, aliens, wacky aliens.
Funny robots.
Yeah.
Space battles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Andor has very small amounts of all those things.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Very small.
Yes, tiny amount. Also, 12 episodes. Which is longer than TV shows are today, for the most part.
It's true.
Structured in a, I would say, kind of a weird way, where it felt like, especially Tony Gilroy, the movie screenwriter who wrote many of these episodes and show ran Andor, it feels to me like knows what a screenplay for a movie is paced like, and made a TV show where they chopped them into episodes a little bit, because the first... I'm curious how you felt. I felt after the first two episodes like the episode breaks could have happened almost anywhere. And then I think it got better as it went along in that way, but it did feel like the structure of this was not a 12-episode arc. This is a good thing, by the way, but rather a set of connected stories, sort of three episodes and three episodes and three or four episodes and two or three episodes that build but also have their own little, like, these are the episodes about the prison break, right?
I guess I've learned I don't care where they break episodes in TV shows, because I just watch all of them as like one big movie. But here's what I did think when I was first watching the first couple of episodes. I get this fear whenever I watch a TV show. I'm like, is this whole show going to be him running around the planet and he owes people money and accidentally killed people and people are trying to get him? And the answer is no. It's going to be that for like three episodes, and then it's going to be like a whole other show that's also good. And then it's going to be, and once I realized that, I'm like, oh, this is great. Because I was watching it, I'm like, oh, I'm not up for 12 episodes of him running around Ferrix.
Right, but it's like, is this an episode, another show where all he's going to do is try to blow up a dam or whatever on a, well, with no, a bunch of terrorists?
By the time they got to the heist thing, I realized it's not going to be any one of those things. Yeah. This show is going to move along, and I have to, like everyone was saying, we were watching it, I thought each new set of things was better than the last one. So yeah. I was like, keep going. Yeah. It was great.
God damn it, when are we going to get to Tatooine? No, I think it's interesting because, yeah, I definitely saw, you know, we're used to the streaming era shows, a lot of shows. I always think of the Netflix Marvel shows as being the sort of the worst offenders in this, which is like, you've got 13 episodes. It's like, yeah, we'll take our time. We're going to wander. And you'll have like six good episodes.
Name names.
Iron Fist.
Okay, thank you.
Even Daredevil season
even the
two.
Good ones.
Yeah,
yeah,
even
Jessica Jones.
Jessica
yeah.
Jones. They sag
they
in the
all
middle.
Have a very right. soggy
this is,
middle.
This is 12 episodes telling four stories
right.
instead
well,
of one.
And so, and what it, yeah. what I like about that is it sort of harkens me back to some of like the. Like, honestly, the British model of TV series where, like, I'll watch a season of Endeavor, which is a mystery show, and they'll do, like, four episodes, but they're an hour and a half long each. So they're kind of like little movies. And in some ways, that's exactly what these are. So I think the most frustrating thing about the episode breaks for me was not necessarily the placement, but the fact that it left me wanting more. Like, every time an episode ended, I was like, oh, my God, I got to wait another week. I'm
like,
so excited.
It's like they kicked you out in the middle of a movie.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, what the hell? Why are we closing down the theater?
Why are we closing the theater in the middle of a movie, John? Yeah.
There was the gas leakers.
I mean, but the stories did have cappers. Like, you're watching the heist one, and then they do the heist. Like, that's an episode,
sure,
right? And so and that's all kind of what it built up. It's like, I can't.
Beginning, middle, end, sort of.
Yeah, like, and then there is a satisfying conclusion to the heist arc, and then they have this sort of denouement. Speaking of not knowing where the, I don't even know, does it, after the heist with the whole, like, I'm stealing the money, I'm going to kill you, was that in the last heist episode or in the first of the next episode?
First of the next, I believe.
No.
I can't even remember.
It was the end of episode six.
It's the end of episode six.
I can't even remember.
Episode seven is kind of the one-off where he goes back to
the beach.
And then he goes to the beach.
Yeah.
And gets thrown in jail.
But anyway, like, I think this show would benefit from binging, though, because of the fact that I can't remember. Yes. I just want to watch this as one big thing.
Especially those in chunks, right? You could watch it, as some people did, over four nights.
I did have, in the first couple episodes, it ended, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess it's over now? And that was weird, but again, I agree. It did leave me wanting more, and in the end, it will never be viewed that way again, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I saw somebody say this, I want to see the fan edit, where they just get taken down into four movies.
Right.
But in the audience, Brian Hamilton raises a hand and says, that was me. Thank you, Brian.
But to Jason, you said before, I mean, like, I think talking about the week-to-week drop, right? And I think Andor really benefited from that, from at least sort of a critical and cultural perspective, right? It was being talked about,
yeah.
like, everywhere I looked, every week, yes. everybody talking about how good this show is. And at the same time, I remember seeing something else come out on, like, Netflix and, like, it was done, right? Like, and so people were like, oh, that show was pretty good. And then they stopped talking about it. Whereas Andor had like 12 solid weeks of like...
I compare it to Sandman, which was another show that I was very excited about this fall, that it felt like, who can I talk to about this? Because everyone I talk to has either not watched as many episodes as me or more episodes than me. So I'm like experiencing Sandman by myself, whereas like Andor week to week was like
everybody wanted to talk about it.
Although it definitely wasn't that kind of show, like where, I don't know, the recent one like Yellow Jackets or whatever is like, there's a mystery and we're going to reveal a little bit each episode and that's what you're talking about. We were mostly talking about the fact of like, can you believe the show?
Yeah,
and enjoying the story. Like, we weren't like, what does that mystery mean? Like, it was just very straightforward story, but just well executed. All the arcs were well executed.
There were some things, I mean, I think Andor, part of its strength is it's a very dense show, and there's scenes where it's like, what does this mean? What are those characters talking about? And it does that thing where it's like, maybe you don't even need to totally understand what is going on. So I feel like there were lots of conversations with people about like, what does this mean? What's going on? What are they talking about? Because there are conversations that people have for the benefit of being overheard by people.
Right.
Or,
there's a lot of subtext.
Yes.
There's a lot of like you said, it's very
and those
dense.
Are things that are nice to unpack with other people.
I mean, there's another vibe that Star Wars has not done. I know obviously the connection is to Rogue One that has come the closest to doing this, but like, if you're going to do something like The Good Shepherd or Syriana, but Star Wars. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What are you even talking about? It's like, this
yeah.
is what we're saying. People
right.
people who are like forming a rebellion and they don't want to get caught and they're leading double lives and they, and unlike the James Bond, they're not running around and shooting people. They're hiding because you have to hide when you're doing all these sneaky things and they're, you know, doing shady stuff and covering their tracks by killing people who you thought were their friends. And that's something I don't know if anyone's ever thought of mixing science fiction with spy stuff, but it's a really good idea.
It sounds like someone should get on
that. Trademark
I'd read some books.
There are at least four books.
Maybe more.
Maybe
let's
more.
Hope.
Yeah.
So one of the things that struck me about Andor is the, I tried to describe it to somebody as being, you know how movies are set in like period pieces? They're like, this is set during World War II, but on the African front, right? That's what Andor feels like to me, is this is set during Star Wars, right?
Yeah, right.
As opposed to being, this is about the universe of Star Wars. This is, we're creating like new lore in the universe of Star Wars, even though they are kind of, but it just felt to me more like, I want to tell a story about the rebellion and about why, how the rebellion would get started and what it feels like to be under the yoke of the Empire. But it just felt to me more like a period piece set in the Star Wars world, which I really like that idea that not every Star Wars story has to bear the weight of like expanding the universe or explaining the
universe. Did you realize what they did to you here?
What did they do to me? They tricked me.
They tricked you into liking a prequel. Because we don't say the P word for this thing, but this thing is a prequel. Like when prequels come out and they're bad, everyone says, I didn't need to know where this came. I didn't need to know how they stole the Death Star plans. I didn't need to know how Han Solo got his name. This is just saying, I don't need to know how the rebellion came. But if you make it a good story, everybody loves
to know
how the rebellion came.
I didn't need to know why Anakin disliked sand.
Like, no one is coming into this and saying, I didn't really need to know how the rebellion was formed. You'll like it if it's a good story.
I saw people complain.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw people complain about, like, well, but we know that Andor dies in Rogue One.
Exactly.
Spoiler. Everybody we all die.
Yeah. Also, it's like, you know, wow, it's what a bummer that the main character of my TV show is not going to die at any moment. It's like, guess what? They're not going to die.
His name is on the title of the show.
Yeah. I expected Andor to die in
like
episode 2 of Andor.
Alf died in season 2 premiere.
Spoilers for Alf.
People always discuss that about prequels, about worrying about like characters being safe or whatever. And I'm like, well, that presupposes that the only interesting stakes are life and death. Which they're not, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a lot as this show
proved. there can be other characters too. Imagine that.
Exactly. But I certainly went into this show thinking like, all right, I mean, I thought Cassian was a fairly interesting character in Rogue One, but he was not somebody I was like, oh, I really need to know what his backstory was.
You kind of did want to know why he was so obnoxious and pissed off all the time, right? And
but the first thing he does in Rogue One is kill a dude.
Exactly. And like that's the rebellion. That's the hint of the stuff in Rogue One is like, hey, the rebellion's not what you thought it was when you saw Luke, the shiny golden-haired boy flying around.
I need to put my money on the table that the last scene of Rogue One is him going to meet with the guy.
Cursed to be prescient like I was with the Death Star piece of thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but you see what I mean though, that like the taking it seriously as a setting.
Yeah.
And being and having that realism of it and saying, "All right, because I do believe Tony Gilroy, who is not, he had like science fiction helpers in the background, elves.
He's a thriller.
Sorry,
he's a thriller.
So that's what Mr. Rogers said. Look for the helpers.
You got to look for the
science fiction helpers.
Look for the
Dan's looking for them all the time.
If you see them, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Call a doctor.
That's right. So because he doesn't care about that so much as he wants to tell a good story, and he knows that this setting and this time frame, it can be the vehicle for a good story. That is just taken on its face of like, okay, we've got an oppressive empire and you've got a rebellion that has to be formed out of something. How does that happen? And what could we maybe use this as a vehicle using the money of Disney to make a comment about fascism?
Yes.
There's no politics.
Star Wars, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, an ingredient that is unfortunately missing from some Star Wars media is that he has something to say. a bold technique.
That's the other thing about this show of like, again, why it distracts people from the idea that you're suddenly liking a prequel, and this is going to sound bad, but it's not. This is the first Star Wars TV show that they've made for adults. And it doesn't mean the other shows aren't for adults. When I say for adults, I'm explicitly saying not for kids, because kids will be bored by
it.
You need to have the adult sophistication and attention span to be interested in this at all. And it doesn't mean that shows for everyone are bad. It's just that's kind of what's turning me on about this is like, yes, part of having a bunch of different Star Wars shows is some of them don't have to be for kids.
It's like a drama that is a Star Wars.
Yeah, because kids will be like, when are they going to get to the lightsaber fight?
Why are there
fine.
So meetings?
That's
many
fine
meetings
for, you know, but like, and all, again, like the Syriana style, like subtext under text and talking to people when not talking to them and whatever, that's too boring for kids. But if you like that kind of, it's a show for adults, and it's difficult apparently to make a Star Wars anything for adults. And I love the Star Wars movies that are for everyone, but I also like a TV show for adults.
Yeah, I mean, there is a maturity to it, and not just in terms of like mature content, although it does a couple places dip into stuff that we don't traditionally see in Star Wars.
Right.
Kids are not into fascism. It does not sell toys. Yeah.
But it is.
Or space brothels.
It's also fascinating to me that this is one of the few shows I feel like gets by without doing much in terms of humor. It's not that it's not like you know, ironic or something.
There's a dark Soviet humor.
There is a little bit of that, but again, not a thing that most. It's not kids a broad are be, audience yeah. kind of humor, right? There's no Putin jokes.
Even the little droid is more sad.
It's yes.
more
sad.
B2 emo.
Yeah, the most depressed droid ever.
It's right in the name.
It's right in the name.
But yeah, I think it is interesting to me because we feel like, as Tony sort of quipped at the beginning, like that lighthearted tone seems like what we identify with Star Wars. And it's interesting. Rogue One obviously like did that like first. And so seeing it as this is an offshoot of that makes a lot of sense. But it is interesting and I think goes to the point of like, look, you can make a Star Wars show that is not these other shows. And I like a lot of those other shows, but like it doesn't, you don't have to do only one type of show. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do only one flavor, right? And I'm super excited for these shows that have people like Tony Gilroy behind them that are like, I have an idea for a great show. It happens to be a Star Wars show, but like I just have a really good idea for a show.
And if it's a Star Wars version of that show, he'll have a lot more money to do it.
And it doesn't just happen to be because the idea, he's got to find a match between franchise and idea. So if your idea is about fascism and rebellion, Star Wars is a good place to slot that in, right?
The Transformers version was less than like the Twilight Zone.
So like that's what you need. You need a story that matches well with the franchise. Because you can't just be like, I'm going to, you know, do a, you know, like a sitcom in Star Wars. You could, but like, Star Wars doesn't lend itself, except for the Life Day stuff. That doesn't really.
You can do the Kashyyyk Life Day sitcom, but I don't know.
I'd watch a Lower Decks version of Star Wars, essentially. Like, yeah, I feel like you could make it work.
You can make almost anything work, but this is such a good fit. He already did the Rogue One things. So he's connected to that anyway, and this is a story he wants to tell. Perfect fit because this is not like pulling something into Star Wars that wasn't there before. Again, it's a straight up prequel, but done well with an adult story.
And it's also interesting. I saw him in an interview mentioned that like if the title hadn't been taken, he could have called this something like The Winds of War. And I think this is one of the things where it's challenging, like calling
space
it
winds
Andor,
of space war
space yeah. winds of space war Star Wars Jason win. Please right there but The Winds of Star Wars
the Winds of the Wills W-H-I-L-S yeah.
But I think that what is interesting about it is that even though Cassian is so central on this, calling this naming the show after him I think is a little bit strange because so much of what's compelling about this show is other stuff.
I think it was interesting naming it after him because I feel like, I mean, I think the show wants you to have seen Rogue One to know who this dude is because even though he sometimes seems ancillary to the larger story, what you're trying, it's an answer to the question of the prequels, is like, how did Darth Vader get this way? How did Andor get the way that we see him? And he definitely starts off different, and he's our audience proxy for experiencing the forming of the rebellion. He's not driving the forming of the rebellion. Right. He's not in charge of the rebellion. He is kind of a leaf on the wind in the rebellion.
He's a member of the galaxy going from being doing his own thing to being radicalized and saying, we got to get rid of
him. And that's why his name is in the thing, is because like through the journey of Andor, you will see how this came together. Right, and not that he is the Luke Skywalker, because
he's not a dynamic force at the center of the show.
I mean, he isn't in Rogue One either.
But that is sort of the point, right? It works in favor here. Well, and we will walk through the sections of this at some point. But just in this, I wanted to mention the plot of the first season. You know, he's a tool being used by the rebellion. Right, he's being used by Stellan Skarsgård, whose name is Luthen, he's being used by him and will be discarded afterward because he knows too much, right? And his arc from the perspective of the rebellion is, wait a second, by the end of the season is, he's a believer now. We can use this guy.
Yeah.
And that is the progression.
They might kill him. We don't know.
They might. I mean,
bold choice for season 2, episode 1.
he'll get better.
What? But yeah. And then they just say Rogue One was an imaginary story that didn't happen. He actually died here. So that is that progression that he goes through is really interesting. But there's a lot of interesting stuff going on around him. And when you say an adult show, I did have those moments where I thought, I can see how somebody who wants space battles and pew, pew, pew kind of stuff would think, you know, come on, when do we get to the fireworks factory? While I'm sitting there, and there are episodes where things artfully don't happen for a long time because the tension is building.
Yeah.
And like that raid on the where they heist the money out of the Imperial stronghold, it builds and it builds and it builds.
Same thing with the season finale.
Yep.
And the prison break. Right?
Yeah.
All of these things are, it is this slow build where, you know, nothing is happening except tension just keeps building so effectively. Just they did such a great job with it.
I did hear from a bunch of people that they watched like the first two episodes and bounced off of it. I assume those people are not listening to this podcast at this point.
Watch episode three. I kind of understand that because it takes a little bit to get its legs, and that first story of him like just being on Ferrix and owing people money is not as compelling.
Do we have to help those people, or do we just leave them behind?
Being told at half speed, because in the one place where it does feel like a let's explain what's going on here and a little prestige drama is where they keep coming back to him as a child.
Yeah, well, that was part of it with him being used, because like you learn that even in his childhood, like no one is really looking out for him. Even the person, his adoptive mother, was like, well, we found a kid while we were raiding a thing. And like, it's nice that she adopted him and everything, but it's like his life is not going well through any part of it. And the fact that he's not like a go-go rebel at the beginning of the series shows he's just trying to scrape by like everyone else.
And I think it also plays to the fact that we learn more about his adoptive parents, you know, as the series unfolds, mm-hmm. and learn that perhaps when they started out, they weren't particularly like, you know, rebellious people either. But that grew as it went. And so I think there's a journey there that parallels Cassian's journey mm-hmm. as well.
I did really like the restraint that I felt that they took with the story back on his home planet in the flashback, where you're like, okay, so there's some kids in the jungle, and then like gradually mm-hmm. you can piece together, and it doesn't spell it all out for you.
There's not a lot of hand-holding in this show.
But, to make it clear that there was, you know, and then eventually it all comes into resolution that there was a mining colony, and there was an accident, and the Empire basically left them all there, mm-hmm. and their parents were in the mine, so their parents all died, and the kids are out on the planet, and then a spaceship crashes, and they're like, let's go see. And like, you're like, why are the kids here, and why are they wearing, what is clearly, you realize, they're wearing scraps of Star Wars clothes, right? And you're like,
Star Wars apparel, please.
That's right. Well, the action figures hadn't come yet.
I think the important thing I took away from that thing is like that even though they were left there, it was everyone for themselves, kind of. Like, no one was, he wasn't in an adoptive family, or like everyone was all together and helping each other. It was just like, we don't know what we're supposed to do.
He and his sister have a connection.
Right, but like, that doesn't last long. And they just like, it's scattered to the four winds. And, you know, a bunch of people.
Dark version of like Peter Pan and like the Lost Boys.
Yeah, a bunch of people die. And you can't be bothered to, like, there's no sort of heroism. They're all going to save each other and, you know, overcome the Empire and take over the ship and fly. It's not going to happen.
It's also an interesting choice of they don't subtitle the dialogue, right? You're left to like sort of piece together what's happening just from context, which I think is an interesting move on Star Wars, and also I think plays a little bit in this show with identity and, you know, the fact that
that culture is lost once he leaves there.
Yeah, but that, mm-hmm. also just the idea of like, you know, we have a show fronted here by a person of color, you know, and I think that is something that is sort of being used here as an analog for sort of the
people that the universe cares even less about.
Exactly. It's less homogenized, right, mm-hmm. too, than I think we see Star Wars generally. Like, the humans are all treated like, oh, they're all humans, right? Like, you know, and whatever. Like, it's just one big block of something, whereas there's culture.
This episode of The Incomparable is brought to you in part by ExpressVPN. You probably heard by now you should be using a VPN when you connect to the internet. Adding an extra step to everything you do every day, it sounds like a hassle, but if you knew how easy it was to protect your connection with ExpressVPN, you'd be already doing it. Yes, you would. ExpressVPN, the easiest way to browse safely, securely, and just better. So many reasons to use a VPN. Maybe you're away from home. I've taken international trips and wanted to get back to my Netflix or HBO Max or something. Guess what? VPN will get you back to the U.S. from the perspective of the internet. And I know people do it the other way, too. You can do that, too. But that's a thing that I love to do, is connect back home so that all my services that I'm paying for know that I am a U.S. member and that I want to see the stuff that I would see in the U.S. ExpressVPN gets rid of all those things that you might have hated about other VPNs you've tried. First off, it's blazing fast. Lots of other VPNs slow your connection to the point where it's not even worth it to connect. I've been there. You connect and you're like, all right, I'm doing this good. And then everything slows to a crawl. ExpressVPN doesn't lag or buffer. You can stream HD video with no issues. And using it couldn't be easier. Just open the ExpressVPN app, click one button, and enjoy instant protection across all your devices. It's that simple. Once you connect to ExpressVPN, you don't even realize you have it on. Your connection is secure. Your data is encrypted. You can set to whatever location you want to be in.
and it's all just so easy. That's why CNET called it the best VPN. That's right. Go to expressvpn.com/snell. You can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/snell, S-N-E-L-L, to get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/snell, my last name. Thank you to ExpressVPN for supporting The Incomparable. So speaking of humans, one of the things that I've seen people talk about is the lack of aliens in most of Andor. And there are some in a few places, but like in the prison, it's all humans. And what I thought was an interesting take that Tony Gilroy had is the idea that, first off, it's clear the Empire is a humans human, doing bad things in the galaxy thing, because that's a mostly humans club.
Except for the bounty hunters. We don't need their scum.
And then... Among the galaxy, like, there are also the humans who are just kind of out there along with the aliens. But that the Empire, as a terrible thing that's happening to the galaxy, that's on us. That's on the humans. They're the ones
as
who are
explained,
doing
that. As we explained, they talk about the planet where they went and got the recordings of the, child things going. That's what they do to the planets that don't have any human life on them. It's like, oh, you just kill them all.
You just kill them.
And save that recording, though.
So so let's talk about the Empire for a second. So we're introduced to a character.
Pro or con?
We're taking a Twitter poll.
Quick around. Let's
It's
around.
A Twitter poll.
So we yay
or nay
the
on the Empire.
Vox Day.
We meet a character who is a woman in a room full of men in Imperial intelligence and security, and we think,
go get her, girl.
So underappreciated by your peers.
But don't go.
You've come a long
way,
baby.
No, we will be totally rooting for you. I sure hope we don't torture anyone.
I hope our friend who's really just trying to get ahead in this man's world, I hope she does well. Oh no, she did well.
Oh, no.
Too well.
That's a great thing.
What a great trick that Tony Gilroy pulls on all of us there is making us sympathize with Dedra Miro from day one.
And then having in the final episode when she finally, the facade kind of cracks when she has
the torture with Bix.
But the tension, the sexual tension between her and
Cyril Kern.
And her stalker.
That's the first crack in her armor. And then the torture, but then finally when she gets knocked over in the big thing. But
there's a scuffle and it turns out she...
They do a good job of having the people in the Empire, even her boss guy or whatever. He seems like he's a wise, magnanimous fascist. He runs a tight ship over there.
The great Anton Lesser.
It's like such sort of like its own little world.
We're not espionage, we're healthcare for the Empire.
And yet feels... perfectly Star Wars.
Yes.
The way the Empire has been portrayed from the start. It's from Peter Cushing forward, especially with all the admirals in the Empire Strikes Back.
The bureaucratic level of it, right? That conference room in the Death Star, like all the people just sitting around debating very intellectually, like, oh, we're so removed from the plight of the everyday person in the galaxy. Shall we crush, should we destroy an entire planet?
Is there any tea?
I think the Imperial...
There's no tea. There is only coffee for me, coffee. Darth Vader.
I take my coffee like I take my armor. Black. I think
Sean Connery.
That's right.
Wouldn't that happen in a different movie?
You've got to get to the Death Star.
I'm your father.
We root for her and we realize she's the bad guy, but she's also like she's just trying to make her way. Yeah. And that guy's a jerk and he doesn't want to give her the information.
She's surrounded by incompetence.
She is
like all of us.
That's the one thing that I actually like. And it's like, yes, it's the heartwarming story of a fascist empire officer who gets ahead on merit. And wait a second. But she does, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I'm tough and I have to do this job twice as much as this guy does.
And what's this guy's name? What's the character with the tongue tie?
Which one?
With the tongue tie. He has breakfast with his mom.
Oh, Karn.
His tie comes out of his thing.
Tongue tie. Tongue tie is an actual thing, so I got very confused.
Cyril Karn.
It's the one with the awful mom.
Cyril enthusiast.
Cyril Karn. Cyril.
He's an interesting contrast to Deirdre, because they kind of try to do the same thing with him, though. He's an Empire guy, and everyone else is kind of like get along, go along, but he's got ambitions. And he's right. Andor, you should look for that guy, because he's important, and it's not just like a guy who accidentally murders somebody or whatever, but he's so unlikable.
Yes.
We are not rooting for him at all.
But he is a fascinating character. You cannot stop watching this character.
He's the dog who gets the bone, right? Yeah. He's like,
Well, he did screw up big time. Like, he was way in way over his head. He's on there with the army people playing army and going down. You know, this
he's
is not going
to
go well.
He's the mall cop who accidentally stumbles into a real crime.
And I kept wanting them to cut back to his boss who said, "This is why I told you not to investigate this."
Right. Yeah. I love the fact that his boss gets like fired because of it.
Yeah.
Well, everything about the, and again, the subtle details of the show are really what makes it stand out. Like the bits about like, oh, he has his uniform tailored, right? His corporate security uniform is tailored.
He's interested in things that aren't the most important things.
Yeah. No. It's like Rehnquist putting the gold stripes on his his robes, right?
Exactly. But it's not just that element of it. It is the like, I am so desperate to be this thing.
He's fetishized Law and Order.
Exactly. Right. But not to the sense of the same as the military guys who are like, I want to shoot it up. He's like, no, I think that it's the order part, right? Really.
Deirdre Mero isn't trying to prove something to anybody. Yeah, she's just really good
at
her job. Cyril Karn needs to change everyone's opinion of him.
Yeah.
Clearly, we don't see his peers or his family. We just see his mom, but clearly no one respects him.
And yeah. He gets a great job in the
Bureau of Fuel.
Well, endless desks.
Yeah.
Endless desks. Jason, because it's nepotism.
Jason,
too.
I know you haven't had a real jobby job in like 8 years.
Is
but
that what offices are like now? Is like a near
you
infinite
one
space full of
left,
desks?
They're
one
either remote
right.
work or they're that. There's
okay.
nothing in between.
Interesting. And there's no computer in front of you. The screens are just offset.
You got two eyes, John.
The thing, like by the end though, I was not that I was rooting for him, but I was kind of like when he gets shot down, he does something stupid. He's in over his head. He gets busted down. His family connections get him another job. Does he settle into that job and keep his head down? No, he does not. Like he's just he's unstoppably like, I gotta do this, I gotta catch this thing, I'm gonna be the hero of the empire. And he's not gonna be the hero. Everybody kind of is like, I feel like him and Deirdre, I'm surprised they didn't bring that further by the end, because you could see that, like, you could see how they can make that connection. She is actually competent and you both want to crush the rebellion, so you know, you could probably make it work.
So on Ferrix, which we come back to, interesting place. It's a place that has been allowed to be sort of like not super controlled by the empire. It's under these like corporate entities
until it is
exactly right. We have really the breakout character of Andor, which is the guy who rings the bell.
Mm-hmm.
The best, just a little detail of that guy. And by the end, the setup is, hey, there's a really cool guy who loves his job, which is to ring the bell. And at the end, it's like, oh, yeah, he's part of the rebellion now, too, isn't he? The little rebellions are everywhere.
This is the thing that they did with like him so up good. In the tower, and he's like, and they actually give the order to shoot the guy. They're like, oh, we've been watching this guy the whole season. Now he's going to get shot at the tower. He does not get shot at the tower.
They send the guy up there, and he kicks him off.
That was a mistake.
A new Star Wars planet that is not defined explicitly by what one environment
by a biome.
By what biome has. And it actually has a culture that we learn about and experience.
That's, yeah, they have.
Who knew that was possible in Star Wars?
And we have the people on the planet, and there are a bunch of different characters there that are related to him in various ways, including his adoptive mother, who is played by
Fiona Shaw.
Who is I did that thing where I pointed at the screen and shouted "Killing Eve," and it's very similar character as it turns out. Mm-hmm. I had that moment where I'm like, oh, she's more than she seems.
Oh yeah,
I think they did a good job of undercutting expectations there as well. Because right up until the end, because she keeps talking about like, I'm going to stay here and the rebellion needs me or whatever, and they're like, they're having a funeral for her, and I'm like, maybe she's still alive and this is part of her body.
Right?
No,
yeah.
No,
it's not that show.
She just plain died before she could do the thing the point that she makes very well in her hollow speech thing.
Yes.
Right? But it's like you expected her to be like, finally she wakes up to the rebellion. She's sick. She's
no,
an
she
old
dies
lady.
Between
she dies.
Episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about this show, which I think is also really well done, is it doesn't conform to your traditional expectations of how a story will play out.
Mm-hmm.
It undercuts those and they have all these little tragedies, right? Like Marva dies off screen, right? And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Kino Loy can't swim, right? Like all of these little tragedies of like, oh man,
I'm sure
this is just how life goes sometimes, right? Like in a movie where you're like, the heroes are protected and they will always win and they will do the right thing and they will come through in the end and like Han Solo will come back and save Luke Skywalker from getting blown up. It's like, no. Yeah. That does not happen.
No, because Cassian's going to hold on to Andy Serkis and they'll swim to shore together. No, he'll get pushed off before he even gets to say anything after he's being told,
floating,
I can't swim. What?
On a floating plank. There was enough room on the floating plank for two people.
Fundamentally, this is a story about how Cassian Andor becomes such a believer in what his cause is that he's willing to die for it as seen in the feature film Rogue One.
And how so many other people go through that same journey. We see parts of their journey. We're following him, but every person that he encounters from, I forget Andy Serkis' character's name or whatever, but or even like his ex-girlfriend who is, let's say, changed by the events of the season.
I look to Dan and Tony for all proper names in Star Wars. Yeah.
People have names. There's nothing wrong with that.
I know. But it's just every person encountered is like, this is how this person was radicalized, or this is how they became collateral damage.
Yeah.
And lots of collateral damage in terms of people just dying left and right, and this person's not going to make it, and this just.
So let's talk about the second story, which is the heist. On Aldani, which is like, this show does such a good job of having everything resonate because we see it and it's just this crap hole planet that they're going to.
It
becomes a word that has meaning throughout the galaxy after they're gone, which is great to see. But in the moment, it is a ragtag group of people who didn't know that they were getting an extra person who they don't trust, who is Andor going under his pseudonym. And they have been out there camping, planning on blowing up stuff and stealing
Imperial from TIE fighters
for a long time. But there's the types, but the types have little spins on them. There's the kid who's the believer, but he's also kind of like the
scribe, the old man.
But he's also kind of like the Karl Marx of the rebellion.
Yeah. I think we call him on a complicated profession. We just call him the grad student.
I keep thinking, am I wrong in thinking that his little diary is going to get published?
That's why he has to die, because once he dies, you can think of him as like a great gray-haired old man.
Yeah.
Not know
Karl Marx,
just a kid who got crushed by a bunch of credits.
It's the kid from the end of the effing world.
A communist destroyed by capital. Is that what you're saying?
They did a little on the nose, but they did it.
Well, it's also interesting. Again, like they spend a lot of time building up these characters only to show how they become collateral damage, right? We spend a lot of time with a whole bunch of those crew members, and most of them die.
Some of them not even like, I mean, I was watching with my wife, right? The guard who they amply explain why is he betraying the Empire. He has a good reason to do it. He dies in such a, like, they don't even put the camera on him, but just pan.
Yeah, he's like on the side.
He kept saying, is he okay? He's like, no, he's gone. And you don't know anything for certain because they don't know, because they got in the ship and they got the heck out of there, and you're probably not going to see him again, but I'm sure he's dead.
And again, another show might be like, oh, he wasn't dead, right? Like he came back and he's pissed off.
Or have dramatic music and show him dying and reaching out.
That guy got cut in half and thrown out of pit. He's really dead.
How do you come back from that?
Always check the pieces.
Yeah.
You got to count the body parts.
But again, this arc is so good because it does so many different things, right? Obviously, we have the heist and we have the burgeoning rebellion, but we also have this commentary on like the Empire's occupation of this planet and what has happened to the culture of the people in Aldani.
Their strategy for a slow burn, like disassembling the culture. There's nothing left of it.
So, and you know, some of that at least was a COVID thing, which I think is brilliant, which is that they were originally going to have a huge festival of the native people of Aldani.
The native people have been decimated.
They couldn't have that many people.
Not many people come back.
But it just furthered the existing story, which is this is how the Empire does what it does.
They let you have your festival until there's nobody left.
It's going to grind you away, you or your society, right? Because there may be people on Aldani who are native people of Aldani, but they have been removed from whatever they were, whatever they believed. This whole ritual that they do, forget it. Like that's over. They have the guy. In fact, there's that moment where it's like, wow, it's pretty big of the Empire to let them come up here for the festival. Yeah. And then they have the lead bureaucrat guy who's like, well, this is the last time. We're going to kill them all after this, and then we'll never have to do it again. And it's like, oh, you're so proud of yourself. Good job, Empire.
I don't know
why that guy was sort of Cary Grant, but that's what he was.
The group on Aldani planning the heist, I like how they, I mean, obviously they super don't trust Andor. But they don't
love each other either.
Yeah. And it's such
for good reasons.
Well, for good reasons, usually. But, you know, the rest of the rebellion we see in Star Wars, they're all like one big happy family.
Right.
Even in Star Wars Rebels,
not in Rogue One.
No.
That's what this
is
coming from.
These are people who are, you know, killers and mercenaries and, you know, people who have their own reasons here.
They think they have a common cause, but in the end, maybe they do, maybe they don't.
And they also are just very, despite this being planned as like a major operation, something that goes on to have all these big ripples, it's extremely like slapped together, right?
A lot of places.
We don't know about this. Yeah. Like they need to bring Andor in, and he's like, you guys don't know how far it is to like, where's the lever for that? And they're like, Like, that's a great
moment. Don't have a pilot.
And they had to do that because otherwise, like, why is Xander involved in this at all? Well, why do they go to the planet to fetch him?
But it also shows just how, like, bare bones the whole rebellion
and how their mission was totally would have failed if they didn't get him. In the same way that later when they sacrificed, what's his name?
Well, and Luthen.
I need the context.
The guy. They know he's coming. The Empire knows he's coming.
Oh, Krieger. Krieger.
Aldani would have been another Anton Krieger. Themselves against that dam.
Luthen, right? Luthen as a freelancer, and one of the ideas here is right. They go see Forrest Whitaker, mm-hmm. who is Saw Gerrera.
Chewing up that scenery.
Extra syllable, so it isn't war. So the whole idea there is the rebellion isn't a thing. It's a whole bunch of different people in a different bunch of different places. Yeah. And when they quote the kid who wrote the manifesto, he's like, acts of rebellion are happening everywhere every day, right? Like, that's the point, is that they're not cohesive, but they all exist.
They're not a rebel alliance.
No.
So Luthen is just like, I got an idea. We're going to steal a bunch of crap
and
from Aldani.
Luthen's really great because he's the broker, right? Yeah. And, you know, Saw Gerrera is the zealot who doesn't want to work with anybody.
And he's not the political person, because that is going to be Mon Mothma.
Yep.
But he's
not quite the money either.
He gives his little speech toward the end where he's basically like, look, I'm not going to make it, but I'm going to make this happen as much as I can, because this is the thing I can do. And he is bold enough to say, we're going to let Krieger die because hey, my source inside Imperial Intelligence, you think you're out, you are not out.
Yeah. Well, because you can't save him, right? Like, like saving him dooms everything, and that he's the pragmatist.
I didn't like that guy anyway.
Yeah. He's the ultimate pragmatist. And I think that's the thing. It's like very, cold and calculating, and that throws that cold water on you from the Rebel Alliance, as you said, John. He's not this like golden haired boys. Oh, we're all here. We'll all work together. We can build the Empire. It's like, nope, you're not working with us.
It turns out the Rebellion is not made of like pure idealistic people who have never had to cross a line.
Yeah,
it turns out Luke Skywalker showed up like one day before the big job, and they're just
number of days since moral compromise zero.
It's like, they're like, Luke Skywalker, so you want to join the rebellion? Have you ever sold a relative into ceremonial marriage for money? And he's like, what? No.
Excuse me?
No. Is that a prerequisite? No. Is that like a power converter? What's going on?
No, but my whole planet thinks I killed my aunt and uncle. So.
I enjoy mercilessly shooting rats.
Womp rats. They're 2 meters. That's too big.
Womp womp.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Luthen does actually, like, they do make it a point to show that they're like, there is a difference between the rebellion and the Empire. Like, Luthen goes to Saw, didn't have to go to him, goes to him and says, basically, look, here's what we're doing. I'm going to let that guy die. And you could kill me now if you wanted, or you could tell him, and giving him that choice. He's not doing it to be manipulative. He's doing that because in the end, he's a good guy and the rebels are good and he feels bad about doing these things. And so he wants to, there's no reason he needed to go there and do all that, except that he wants to get kind of like how
he's getting buy-in from Saw a little bit.
Right.
Yeah,
but
right?
The same,
I disagree.
Yeah,
I think he's manipulating him because he's like, I need Saw.
He's
Saw's
playing
the biggest.
But it's the same thing. It's the same thing that Andor does. The same thing that Andor does at the very end. Andor goes onto the ship, gives him the gun, said, this is how we're going to make this connection. So how does Luthen wants to make this connection with him. So he's going to go there and he's going to put his life on the line because Saw is unpredictable and could have missed.
But he's also, because
he wants to cement that relationship.
It is a gambit,
kill Cassian, right? Like, until he's like, oh, he could still be useful. Right?
That's what Cassian has to do, is he has to say, look, the only way we're going to make any connection here is I have to show you that I am in. So here, you can
one, I could kill
not.
You, and two, I'm not going
and
to. I'm going to give you the gun.
That's what Luthen does to Saw, is he goes there and tells him all the info and says, I'm in your camp. Like, you could kill me now if you wanted. This is how I'm showing you that we need to do this together.
Yeah.
And I think that we should let him die. And so I was like, all right.
I do love that. I mean, like, so his the code name the Empire gives him is Axis, yeah. right? Because like everything rotates around him, right? Mm-hmm. He is the connecting, and he's right now the only the very sort of tenuous connection between all these different between the money and Mon Mothma and the political and the people who have the guns, right? Like, and the people who are running this operation.
And who knows else? Because I don't feel like in season one we saw all the people that he is connected to. Yeah,
sure.
Right? No, no, no. I think there's other cells. I think he's basically got his finger in every pot.
I think he spends all day every day flying around in a spaceship going to meetings. Right? I mean, and he checks
should
in on.
Should have been an email.
Checks in on the antique shop once a week.
Well, no,
you know,
he puts in a good couple of half days selling antiques.
He's got an assistant for that. I think it's by appointment only. I don't think that shop is 95.
Maybe right.
Getting back to the heist arc, like one of the things I enjoyed about that is as a middle chapter here that we meet these people on the Space Goat planet, living you know, and schlubby and everything, and then
Space Goat's coat to coat.
Yeah. Yep, I almost made that joke before. And then we do. We don't know who they are other than in this context. But we learn in the next arc. Hey, the leader woman type thing. She's a rich girl, right? She's a secret rich girl.
Nice twist, right?
And like
from our survivors from the heist,
revealing of all who all these people are, and then you learn about Cinta or whatever her name is. What is she? Cold blooded killer.
Yep.
They're wondering who she was. She who
as many perils as possible.
Is she who you thought she was? And it's like up and down the line, you know. And I thought that was that's what you want to do with the middle chapter because it in their experience with each other, they have their impressions of each other, which, like any good spy, may not be the truth about those people.
Well, also it's easy. It's kind of fascinating to see. You can envision a different scenario in which that played out and some of the, like, two different characters from that heist survived and we'd be learning about them and learning, like, about Skeen and Nemec and
stuff. Yeah, it's too bad. Sorry.
Like, but no, I mean, and that's, I love that the show plays fast and loose with it. Like, you know, you don't really know going in, like, who are our characters? Like, who are we caring about? Who are we following? Yeah. Until you're like, well, these are the only ones left.
And they even did a thing like with the rich girl and her romance with Cinta, but also like she ends up parroting Cinta's line back to Mon Mothma, the thing of like you get what's left or whatever. I thought that was I forgot the details of that arc, but I thought that was well done, where she gets basically not brushed off, but like in terms of like the rebellion comes first.
Yes.
And our,
she's
and our,
Mon Mothma's sister cousin.
I thought it was younger sister. No,
she's cousin. They refer to her as her cousin, but the daughter calls her Auntie Vel. So yeah. I think that's more of a title or like a
The other sub theme of this thing is that Luthen has the whole big speech about it, which I thought was great. It was like, you know, sacrifice everything. Like, what am I sacrificing for this? Like, I don't get to have a normal life. I don't get to have normal relationships. Everything in my life is secondary to this. I'm sacrificing everything. And each one of them bumps up against that with like, you know, get
the
little
limits.
Yeah, yeah, like grab what the you know love they can while they can,
right?
But otherwise
on the goat planet.
Yeah, but or even just
love
like
on the goat planet, the original title of this series.
Yeah. Yeah,
or even just like right
I like
before,
it.
Right before the funeral, they have that little shared look when they're in the room together. Like this is all you get, right?
Because they're not going to have a happily ever after because this is what they're doing here. Mm-hmm. So Mon Mothma, we should talk about character from Star Wars.
In a Star Wars show,
right? Like it's a Star Trek.
A Mon Mothma prequel.
Finally, a character who has an action figure in the show that sells action figures.
The Star Trek people would call her a legacy character, which is like, but a largely unexplored, other than in Rogue One, legacy character. Yeah. And here we get to see that aspect of it, which is, I think, a very clever extrapolation from what we see in Star Wars, which is she is the political person. And here we find out just how political she is. She's a senator who is skimming money, defeated to rebellions, and using her... She's like a figurehead of the opposition in the Senate, and so everybody thinks she's kind of a joke. Mm-hmm. And so she's playing the part of being the joke while funding the rebellion. Yeah,
which is brilliant.
Until the Empire's like, let's start doing a tax audit upon Mothma.
Taxes, they always get you. Yeah.
We just invented accountants, and it's time to use them.
And her good-for-nothing husband gives her way out of that, which is great.
I do love
that. So, you know,
and she has to call her friend Ben Miles back from the home planet.
Good old Ben Miles.
And say, what am I going to do? And he says, well, I'll tell you what, there's a mobster who's got a kid who wants to date your daughter.
I will say, so Mon Mothma, you know, obviously a character who appeared in the original trilogy for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Who has now been played far more on screen time by Genevieve O'Reilly, I don't remember which one, who has now played her in Rogue One and this, as well as voiced her in several animated series and played her in a deleted scene in Revenge of the Sith. Man really runs the gamut. And I like that we've gotten a chance to actually explore that character much more through all those lenses to see how she has evolved.
She's the perfect untouched character where there was nothing there but an impression.
And
right?
You're like, well, how is this person who's very respectable and wearing this like gown and everything? Yes. This person with the rebellion? Like, what is, I guess they're in charge of the rebellion, but like, how do you get to that point? And
they're also, I mean, I feel like it's a showing you a different reflection on, say, you know, we have Leia and her father, who we see in the prequels, who are part of the Senate, but they are the like,
they're perfect. They're opposing it out in the open. They're we shouldn't do this, but they're not doing anything secretly.
Yeah, they're not doing anything, maybe not doing anything dangerous even, you know.
Until they get those plans, right?
Yeah, until they get the plan. But up until then, they seem to be just running around having meetings, and they are kind of untouchable and perfect and not in trouble. And perhaps they have unlimited funds or whatever, but they don't.
All those funds are on the planet, though.
But Mon Mothma is, I mean, I just
Mon Mothma gets compromised. Yeah, those two do not.
Yeah, I read it as that she's also, I mean, I just am fascinated by the fact that she's kind of the useful idiot for the Empire. Like, she's the one who they're like, look, there's opposition.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Right, haha, Mon Mothma's going to say her silly thing, and she loses. That's how it's going to go.
She's giving a speech, and everybody's just like turning off their lights and leaving.
Which
made me think of, like, if you ever watch C-SPAN, you see the like giving the fiery speech and they pan over.
Nobody there. Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
And this movie, like, when you see her in the other movies, she's like, she's all dressed up and everything, and she's like the ceremonial important person. But in this movie, you get to see the desperation of trying to be secretly part of the rebellion while being that role.
And she's
and
got
it's
a driver,
fun.
But the driver's been replaced, and he's probably a spy, which he totally is. Yeah. And she's being watched, so they have to do she has to go to Luthen's thing and be like, oh, I'm a flighty woman who's interested in antiques. And then they have to do the hand gestures and stuff while they're saying, okay, you're going to blow that thing up. I need more money. Yeah, like,
fantastic work by Stellan Skarsgård. His body language and acting in this show is
wig.
Yeah, where he puts the wig on and he has to do the simpering look, you know, and everything to get into character.
Because they're in a repressive regime and they're being watched for good reason.
My two favorite things about him, obviously, there's his two big scenes. One of them, his big speech that he gives, where he gets to finally let it out after being so restrained. But the other one is his scene in the spaceship, which this is what, like, there's not a lot of spaceship space battle things in this, but when you have a show, again, a show made for adults that's building tension or whatever, you have so much built up around a space battle or a brief space battle that it is exciting and compelling to show that, like, all right, he's angry on that bridge yelling at his spy person, and then this one is like, oh, they finally got him, he's caught, and it's like, no, he's actually really good at this stuff. Yeah. Watch him do this part. You've just seen him going around and talking to people and doing sneaky things behind the scene. He's competent, and you know, that's the whole, like, is he a Jedi or is he not a Jedi floating around there.
Also, it's the Empire's arrogance too, because it's like a simple traffic stop where they're like, we can pull this guy over, shake him down a little bit, see what happens, and they're like, oh my god, no.
But unlike, say, Han Solo, he's not flustered, but he has a plan, he executes the plan, the plan works.
Doesn't drop a bunch of spice that gets him in trouble for years to come.
his excuse the plan. His plan works. And one minor touch on this, I liked the, you know, his whole thing of like sending a bunch of crap into the radar dish. So much more exciting of an effect than an orange fireball. I love seeing it just like shred the thing, and the people on the ship are like, "What?" But and then the ship is gone, and then the lasers.
But our radar dish is the thing we do. Right. That's our ship. Our ship is all radar dish.
Well, how do you break a tractor beam? And the answer is throw a bunch of crap into a tractor beam.
Does he think he can escape? And then the TIE fighters go after him. They get chopped in half, and he leaves. And the whole time he's just like, "Huh? Do this.
That's right." And he knew. He's like, "I've been waiting to use this button."
All right.
Yeah, this is my little laser beam TIE fighter cutter that I've been. I bought it from Runco. Let's see if it works.
And I like to contrast that with how pleased the Empire was of themselves with their plan of, like, we'll put the dead bodies back in the ship so the rebels won't know. And they're happy and they're celebrating the thing. It's like, okay, great. You did something. You have like a room full of 50 people in an entire empire, and you pulled up this simple thing, and you're going to have cake in the break room.
Unfortunately, one of them was a mole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're going to have cake in the break room, and there's the guy behind you. No, he's talking to this guy in the...
What about
the Empire loses?
So anyway, I like the Mon Mothma thing. I like the claustrophobia of it, right? The claustrophobia, yes, that she's living a life where everything is being watched. She doesn't have refuge in her car. Her husband, she can't talk to or trust in any way.
And you know, when we start watching this, you always know, like, oh, she's going to have to make difficult choices related to her family and the rebellion. And because in the beginning, she's trying to have it all, and she's not. And like, on top of that, the daughter has to be, you know, rebellious in the way the daughters are rebellious. You're rebelling by wanting to have an arranged marriage. Like, yeah, that's what kids do, whatever you don't want them to do.
But it's also she lives in a life of ostensible luxury, right?
Yes.
She's at these fancy parties and she's got money.
She's got a really cool car. I love that
car.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, oh, surely she has it all, but like she's trapped by it.
She's trapped,
right?
She's not going to be able to keep it all.
Yeah, that's why claustrophobic is one of the things. Exactly. And I do find myself wondering, like, where's the moment where you find yourself on Yavin in a hovel, right?
In a temple that's falling apart.
And where is your daughter at that point?
But she kept the gowns.
The husband, you can, like, whatever. She kept the clothes, yeah.
She kept the gowns.
And the husband is discarded, but, you know, like, dealing with the daughter is like, because the daughter, set aside the rebellion, the daughter would be an issue anyway, just like a family thing, because she's not, they don't have a connection. There's that. She's playing, the daughter is playing the father off against the mother, and they don't like each other, and they were an arranged thing. And then there's a rebellion on top of that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, can nothing go my way? You think she could, like, take her daughter with her or whatever? That's, they don't.
Take your daughter to Rebellion Day.
No.
To Yavin. Like, I don't think her daughter wants to go. Mom, we're stuck in this decrepit temple.
Where are the Ewoks? You said there would be Ewoks. That's a different place.
I want to wear my ceremonial garb and talk to cute boys.
Yeah. Prison Break, the Star Wars version.
Oh, the Andy Serkis show.
While the stuff is going on, because we get the other thing again in parallel, but the Andor plot ends up that he goes to a lovely beach vacation and is arrested arbitrarily and thrown in jail because the Empire can do that, which I thought was a very nice moment.
Enhanced sentencing minimums because of the Aldani.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is where the irony comes into the show.
Because Aldani is now like Luthen, I think, says,
that's what we want.
We want them to crack down.
There's the response to it, and that makes people even angrier.
Yeah.
And that's how this
exactly
works.
Like, say you had a like a policy where you wanted to lock down people in their houses, and the sign of one person getting sick or something like that. People might get angry.
Yeah.
They might protest and rebel.
They might. And so he gets sent to prison, and it's the perfect panopticon clockwork prison where they are in, also beautiful. It's an Empire joint, so it's all white and gleaming and has floors that'll electrocute you. And they have to assemble.
Started out as a bug, but then they're like, oh.
And they have to assemble parts for something, which is revealed in a post-credit scene in the last episode, is just little tiny parts of, like, solar panels on the Death Star.
They need a lot of those pieces.
They do. Which I liked because it was just like, yep,
of course.
I mean,
of course you need to build the Death Star. How, like, where would you get all those pieces?
And I know people droids could do it in a factory.
It's like,
you
gotta build
droids. You know what's cheaper than droids?
Slave labor, prison labor.
Yeah.
And so that's what the Empire is all about.
Self-policing prison. And again, you have to be impressed with, like, the system. I mean, it's not a great system, but I did like the prisons with the hydro power of, like, having the water fall through the middle of it to power the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the floor is isolated from each other. They need to do a version 2, I feel like, on this prison system. There's some flaws that need to be patched.
Well, they need to do a version 2 on the Death Star, too. So the Empire never does anything right the first time.
Again, the slow build there, too, also, where we are with Andor, and he has to learn the ropes, and he has to get people together, and you're like, you don't know anything. And then he starts sussing it out and figuring out who the people are, but he's still got to figure out Andy Serkis, who is running the show as one of the prisoners, which is a key point that the prisoners are policing themselves. There are very few. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, there are not that many guards here, are there? No, there are not that many. Well, but they have to convince Andy Serkis because he's basically the leader. And there's that fantastic episode where they go through the whole thing and they find out that, like, they took a guy and he was supposed to be going home and they just put him somewhere else. And then people rebelled and they killed them all. And this is, like, information leaked, gleaned from the medic who is treating the old man.
Yeah. This is what you said. Like, this is just a small version of the bigger thing. Is like, these people aren't going to get their act together until they realize how bad it is.
Yeah.
Right? So they have to understand.
Yeah.
They have to be even
more. And there's that moment where the one who has been subverted and turned into the jailer for, even though he's a prisoner himself, and is smart and tough and played really well by Andy Serkis. Mm-hmm. And there comes to that moment where even he realizes. And in fact, during the prison break, which is a very exciting thing when they do the prison break, there's that moment where Andor says, no, you need to give the speech. Mm-hmm. Here's what to say. Right, you need to do it.
Right. There's two important themes that we keep coming back to here that play into the prison one. One is the Empire's hubris. Once again, we don't need that many guards.
Saves
we have
money.
Them run themselves.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
With the floors, will take care of everything. And the other part of it is this idea that Cassian brings up on Aldani at 1.2 about the Empire, about playing by the rules, right? And we're like, Kino, Andy Serkis's character is like, I'm just keep my head down.
Yep.
I'm going to get the job done. I will get let out. Like, I'm playing by the rules. I'm doing what I was told, like, in good faith, right? And
right.
Like, the whole point is, like, no, man.
The system doesn't work.
Yeah,
no,
they don't
care
have to
about
play.
You.
They don't have to play.
They will
the
kill
rules.
50 people to cover up a clerical error.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, like, don't. There are no rules,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing you got to learn is
and
the
not,
rules are.
They're not
the
going to let you out.
Exactly. Yeah. You're never leaving. So, like, I like that moment. I think those two themes come back often throughout the show. It's like, we can't just try to play by the rules, right? Like Mon Mothma is an example of playing by the rules.
Or
the
Ferrix story. We'll just go along to get along with the Empire.
Well,
they'll
no,
come, they'll get our stuff, they'll leave, it'll be fine.
Right, right, which
exactly.
is the theme of the whole thing, which is
yeah.
the way fascism wins is people who are not being directly threatened by it think that if they play along with the system, everything will be okay.
I didn't say anything when they came
and
for so-and-so.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
And
yeah.
it won't.
Yeah.
And that's where the rebellion starts. So... anyway, the prison break stuff was great. Like, it looked great. It was super tense.
So many good shots in the show. You say prison break, and I just see that overhead shot of the white figures,
the white and the geometric shape, hexagon or whatever
it is. There
are a lot
of very artfully done shots in the
show
that are just way better than they needed to be.
And the widgetizing of it, where they're like move, turn, pull, turn, insert, pull, like that kind of rhythmic, almost like a dance of the prisoners as they're doing it, and they're all looking at each other because they're supposed to be competing, but they're also kind of all in the same group, and it's just really good stuff.
You know, this show looks amazing. It looks like its own thing. It looks identifiably Star Wars when it needs to. I haven't seen the making of yet because I don't think they've released it yet, but it is clear that this is not just shot on the volume, like everything
sure.
else. And that's
it
hard
does make a difference.
With Obi-Wan and with the seasons of Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, there is a sameness to how they're kind of presented that this gets very far
and
away
not,
from.
And I'm not sure the sameness seems to be there. Maybe it's just a budget thing, but like a lot of these sort of more artfully cinematic movie style shots that are in this, you could do in any of those.
It's a style choice, right? I mean, you look at this and it clearly Rogue One is shot in a similar way. It feels like very mostly handheld, close in, low down, right? Like it's all about, there's like a lot of perspective.
A lot of inside too, which works better
inside,
on set. I think that the Aldani stuff could have been
done
in the volume.
They'll show the set. Like even if it's just them going on the space bus to Ferrix, taking the bus back and forth, you see out the window, the world that they're going through, or like I said, the overhead shot of them escaping from the prison, or even just the way the space things are done. It's just kind of more, a little bit more artful, a little bit more sort of pulled back, artfully composed frames intermixed with the, hey, we're going to show people talking to each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful looking shots in this for sure. And I do love that, the prison break where they finally get in the moment where the Empire people all lock themselves in a closet.
Yep.
It's just,
they will come for us.
So good.
And there's a lot of misdirects in there too, which I think is great. I think on A Complicated Profession, when we end up talking about a lot, my phrase was like, this show always zigs when I expect it to zag. And like things never go quite the way you expect them to. And so having moments like, you know, we talked briefly before, but like Andy Serkis's character getting to the top, freedom, the promised land at sight.
Horrible freedom.
I can't swim. And just, you know, heartbreaking. And I thought, just really a tremendous moment. And like, do we ever find out what happens to that character?
No.
I don't think so. And I don't think it matters. But like, because sometimes you meet somebody and they change your life and that's it. You part ways.
I mean,
you never see him again.
We only see him and his Scottish friend who's in Rogue One,
Nelsie,
when they get to the land. So, like, where's everybody else? Have
they
all drowned
all just,
or
all
been shot or
maybe.
What?
Who knows?
We don't know.
Some of them got picked up. Some
Not
of them
what
drowned.
The story's about.
Some of them got other places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of them will take their story elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's it. So that and this show, like, that corner doesn't need to be filled in. We're just going to move on.
The restraint, I think, is what comes back to a lot of this show. Like, there is a... I think in counterpoint to a lot of the other Star Wars shows, which feel like we need to spend the time like, oh, we can explain this. Oh, we can explain this thing over here. Like there is a lot of restraint in this show into being like, this is this thing. Don't worry about it. We're done. We're moving on to the next
thing. That's the message of the show of going through the arc is it's the, you know, show don't tell. They're not telling you that there's going to be a lot of collateral damage and it's disorganized. You're not going to be able to keep up. They're showing you. You will go through this show and there'll be people and you won't see them again and you won't know what happens to them because the people don't. And that's what it's like to be in a disorganized, slowly forming rebellion. It's not a thing where you go to meetings every week and everyone has a plan and you go to
there's coffee.
Do.
Yeah.
We know
it's not a job.
All we know is that Andor dies at the end of Rogue One and Mon Mothma is still alive.
Yeah.
Every other character, and which is the irony of this, was like, I know, but he dies. It's like, he's the only one you know survives the show.
Yeah.
The
right?
rest of them may not make it out of the show alive, other than him and Mon Mothma.
And Melshi.
Good old Melshi.
Good old Melshi.
Maybe. Maybe.
He makes it to Rogue One. We know that. I think he dies.
That's true.
He dies in Rogue One, though.
So and Cyril's
mom is going to live forever.
And so it comes back to Ferrix at the end.
Yep.
Andor's mom has passed away. B2 Emo is very sad. Mm-hmm. They've tortured our friend the
Bix.
Yes, has been we've been tortured by the sound. Let's get this straight. By the sound of the death screams of alien children.
Yes.
That are put in a loop to drive people mad.
That seems like something you'd invent in a mirror universe. Yeah.
the torture. This is they're going to torture her. So it's terrible how they even got the tool of torture. Then they use it. She does not bravely resist torture.
Yeah. No.
Like that's just like because this is a show for adults in which torture, as we know, breaks people down because that's what it's supposed to do.
And
she's not
your
like
moral...
you can't break me because I'm tough. No.
But it also doesn't get them anything, really.
Right. But like she doesn't have that much to give them
exactly.
Really. I mean,
they want to know if it's Krieger at one point is the guy is Luthen, and they're like, you're way off base, right?
In the end she's so broken that it's not like they can trust, you know, this torture is stupid. They can't trust anything she says anyway because
you'll do anything to
also
me.
A little,
and she's brain scrambled anyway. And then Cassian, being the idiot he is, he comes back to the planet for the funeral anyway.
Yeah.
Even though everybody there tells him, don't come back to the planet,
he's
dude.
Not that
it's
brave.
Your mom.
I understand.
Yeah. So I like
Trump as a mom.
The internet is completely split 50-50 between, as far as I can tell, people that would attend their mom's funeral and horrible.
What if it's a trap?
I would attend my mom's funeral
even if
it's
was
a
trap.
Trap.
No,
mom,
right. Your mom would not want you to go into the trap. His mom is young from beyond the grave. And she's at the hologram. She says, she's telling everyone to rebel. And she says,
Cassian,
if you're here, what are you doing?
Also put on a jacket.
Yeah.
It's cold. You'll catch a death of cold. The torturer, I really appreciated
Dr.
that touch
Gorst,
too. Because the torturer is the most boring, uninteresting person who's just really...
He's really interested in this
cool technology that he's figured out. Yeah,
he really scrambles
like
their brains.
Missing Weasley brother.
That's a good... That was a good little touch. And I loved that Baroque, weird, science fictional element of like, let me tell you where we got this.
And so how does this work? But
Death screams of an alien race
but
we
destroyed.
But the
Borg-Gullet thing from Rogue One doesn't work. It's like he took a second bite of the apple. And I think he got it the second time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I 100%.
This
agree
is
that.
Yeah.
But the Ferrix theme is great because this whole it's all building to this. It's this powder keg. We know it. We see everybody coalescing on it. And what I love about it is that it ends up being not at all what any of those people are expecting. Right? Cassian shows up. He doesn't really go to the funeral. He's just there to save Bix. He doesn't show up, and like everybody's looking for him. They're all looking in the wrong place. Yep. They're all distracted.
In the wrong place.
And then the riot goes off and everything goes down.
The funeral is early.
The funeral is early. More people show up than you have food for.
Yep.
and even so, the funeral, like, all they're coming together, and it's like, oh, this big tension. They must have a well-executed plan. That guy in the green, he just made a bomb more or less on his own
because
he's
pissed. His father got tortured and killed.
Exactly, but, like, it's not like he's coordinating with all the rest of the band.
This is just a funeral. Those are not battle.
A funeral and a riot broke out.
Grenades.
It's not, well, the Empire was waiting. We don't want to clear the box of grenades until right when the funeral starts.
It's not a well-executed anything. It's just an outpouring of grief and anger that Cassian skirts the side of and runs away from.
Somebody gets hit in the head with a brick made out of the, funeral.
Yeah, the subject of the funeral. Yeah. That's that was that realism that I really liked about it, that it's like, you know, sometimes the people are just... enraged, and it happens,
and
things
one of them
blow
has
up.
One of them has a bomb, one of them has a brick.
One dumb dumb Imperial comes up and kicks the saddest droid over because he doesn't know what to do and throws his jacket over it.
I love that'll soothe them.
Because they don't know what to do because they're idiots.
Right, they're not.
And the guy ringing the bell is going to keep ringing that bell. You can't stop him.
Send a stormtrooper up there.
Send one stormtrooper up there. That'll deal with the bell guy.
What's it going to take? One stormtrooper? Yeah, that whole last scene is incredibly well executed. Like the prison break, like the heist, it has so much tension going for it because you don't know exactly how it's going to play out.
One of the zigs when you think it's going to zag that I like is all the characters except for Mon Mothma converge there. But about half of them just watch the funeral.
Yes, that's right.
And Luthen is like, I don't know what to do.
But he all has different reactions. Like they just show their reactions. Yeah. They look at it and they're thinking like, you know, Luthen's like,
Cyril Karn is like behind here. The security line. That's
my girlfriend.
I forgot to get a ticket. Uh-huh. Vel and Cinta, I guess Vel is looking for Cinta and Cinta's like, well, I have someone to murder. I don't have time to attend a funeral. But it's like, they're all supposed to converge.
Except for that guy's funeral.
Yeah, well. He's in a closet. They're not going to find him for a while.
Yeah. Everything about that feels, it's chaotic and yet perfectly well controlled. And like, it has that sort of, that dynamic tension to it. And I think it is a triumph.
And when we leave, it feels kind of like all the other things where you make a big mess and then the characters go someplace else.
Yeah,
and
it's like, they
cannot
stay there.
The mess is behind you. And it's like, I guess that made some forward progress. I mean, some people looked at it. Are they going to rebel and be successful? They're just going to be crushed by the Empire.
We don't hear about Ferrix again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is this planet just going to be blown up later? But that's what it's like. I mean, that's why we're following Cassian through all this. It's just, we don't get to stay with everybody and see how they go, whereas in the original trilogy or whatever, you get the group of characters and you follow them through and you see where everybody goes and they all come together in the end. And this, the forming of the rebellion, is not like that. It's just shedding things behind you as you run.
Yeah. Ends with B2 Emo and a bunch of other people.
Fried Bix.
Jumped on a spaceship. Go left and then up.
Literally get out of here.
Yeah. And then of course Andor goes to Luthen's ship and says basically, here's my gun. I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Or just kill me.
Or kill me. But right. I'm committed now. And that's where we left. There will be another season with 12 more episodes that will take us up to presumably where we see him at the beginning of Rogue One, more or less, which means, I guess that means we'll probably meet K2SO.
Seems likely.
Alan Tudyk in there.
Yeah, this whole series is making me, I think, did I do the Rogue One podcast? I don't even remember if we did, but like, the protagonist
like
of Rogue One, what's her name?
Jen Erso.
This is great. This is a great
color. Wikipedia Dan.
Because of the tortured history of that script or whatever, her motivations and like her character arc and motivations through that story are not as well sketched out as granted over 12 how many episodes Andor is. I mean, there's a reason this series
is
named after him and not after her, but like, I feel like she was so ill served by the scattershot nature of that script to not give her the coherent motivation so that at any point I know what she's thinking.
Also, I think that was a script that he inherited and rewrote.
Yeah.
So that
really hurt that one. Whereas here, now given Andor, I think at every point I know what Andor's thinking and how he's feeling about this and where he came from. And where, of course, we all know where he's headed to. And that is a much more satisfying thing than just having a character sort of bounce from scene to scene. Like, I never felt a connection with her because she was made to say and do so many different things in so many different scenes. And so it's kind of a shame that the culmination of this TV series will be a movie that is really great, but is built on a central character that they don't do as well as Andor in this.
Yeah. It's a challenge, but I want to call out the music in the show. Nicholas Britell wrote the score. It's great.
There's some electronic thumping in a part of this that I was like, this is Star Wars? It was really good.
It's fascinating because it's neither John Williams nor Ludwig Göransson doing the Mandalorian scores. It's totally its own thing.
Yeah.
It works really well. It's got a sort of industrial vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And like I love that he does a little evolution of the theme. Every episode's theme is different. It always contains the same motif. which does pop up in other places, that is sort of Cassian's theme, but it always has a slightly different spin on it. I think so far two-thirds of the soundtrack is out. I think the last third will be out probably at the end of this week as we record this, but it's really great.
It's very much like the show. It's a score made for adults where it's not, yes, and no poppy hooks that are going to be like, you're bopping to that and like, oh,
or,
look, it's,
well,
it's,
except, or for homage. The, except for the beach, except for the one, the Neon Genesis one, which is great. That is a,
but
that is
also not a John Williams homage, right? It's like,
yeah,
it's,
no, no,
it's
no.
Not
it
doing,
is,
it's not doing, yeah.
It is, it is dark, darker and moodier and more, yep, like, not like an X-Files theme, but
it,
like,
it's actually the score it reminds me the most of is actually The Expanse.
Yeah,
that's a lot,
yes,
of vibes that sort of, yep, worked with The Expanse.
Yeah, who's that? Was that Bear McCreary?
Clinton Shorter.
Clinton Shorter, right? Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good comp. For that, I really liked it, and I found myself, I think it's always a good sign when I find myself specifically enjoying the music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some music you can enjoy, but some of it is made to be wallpaper, and the music in Andor really comes to the fore at several moments.
And they're
that
also
are key
very
moments.
Good at not using it when they don't,
mm-hmm,
need to. Somebody pointed out, I think, Luthen's speech.
Mm-hmm.
There's
no
music.
Music,
yeah.
Just so, like industrial background hum.
It's very judicious in its use of that, whereas, you know, John Williams, there's,
yeah,
no
the
moment that
thing.
They can't fill with, yeah, John Williams, which is great. John Williams is amazing, but would not have worked here. Although I would watch the cut where somebody rescored this
yeah,
John
the whole
Williams
thing.
Music. It would be
but
very
it'd be,
weird.
It'd be
just,
Jaws,
that, just that star, just that that one spaceship battle.
You could do Jaws. That's right. You could do Jaws of the funeral scene.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me, not musically because it's very different, but in terms of the restraint and how they use it, to the Last of Us video game soundtrack. Very in the background, very slow and laid back, also very kind of sad, and it'll come in a little bit when they want to hit the emotions, and then kind of just fade and disintegrate and then kind of swell back up again. It gave me that kind of vibe.
So I was talking on a different podcast with on Downstream with Julia Alexander about Andor, and she made the point that like Andor is a slow burn. Like it's mm-hmm. it's not done as well straight out of the box as some of the other Star Wars shows, but it's also the best reviewed of all the Star Wars shows. And Disney obviously knows this because they put it on Hulu, they put it on ABC.
Yep.
They're trying to get people to see it. I do believe what John said earlier, that I think it actually binges really well and that people will find it,
mm-hmm.
and that the word of mouth has helped. And when people turn on their Disney Plus to watch something else, they will probably be like, "Oh, I heard that Andor show is good," but. Julia's overarching point was it may not be the breakout hit in terms of, you know, ratings measurement that Disney might have liked, but that in some ways it's the show that Disney needed to show what Star Wars can mm-hmm. be.
Yeah.
And that as it'll be fine. Like, I think Andor is going to get watched, even if it didn't get watched maybe as quickly as The Mandalorian did, because yeah. they had a cute Baby Yoda in that.
I was going to say, we're not going to see the Cassian Andor pajamas.
Right. But
they
but,
do have that Lego no, set.
It'll be the Lego set,
which is so weird. It's like, yeah, Cyril Karr and Jason Andor. And it's like, do I need a Lego fascist? Is that what I mean?
Don't we need the prison Lego set?
Yeah.
Flip the switch to electrify the floor.
Yeah. It turns red. Yeah. It's great. But that artistically, knowing, like, because Star Wars, I know you guys have talked about this a little bit on your A Complicated Profession on the Incomparable Network, your Star Wars focused podcast. Star Wars is kind of at sea a little bit right now, where it's like, what's our movie strategy? Nobody really knows. Disney's got a new CEO too.
A movie.
So who knows what Bob Iger thinks of all of this?
You were making the movie. You're not making the movie.
No, so,
not this week. Maybe next week.
Is it a trilogy or is it a movie?
So they've got the movie strategy is up in the air. The TV stuff, like, they came out of the gate. They had to get that stuff out there really fast. So they did Mandalorian. They did Book of Boba Fett. They turned Obi-Wan from a movie into a TV show. Like, they've done a bunch of stuff, but what Andor does, it was Julia's point, and I agree with it, is show that just as Marvel has had great success saying there isn't one genre of Marvel movie. Marvel
right.
is a very large canvas, and we can do different genres in different places and it's fine. That Andor is like a show that, unlike Mandalorian and Obi-Wan and other shows that kind of play some of the same notes as the Star Wars we know, it shows that Star Wars can be whatever it wants to be,
yeah.
and can be really good. And that and to me, having Star Wars generate a show that is legitimately one of the good dramas of the year, not the good sci-fi dramas, not the good Star Wars shows, like legitimately good TV show, full stop, is very good for Star Wars in showing like you can do this. You can, all it takes is somebody like Tony Gilroy to say, here's the show I want to make inside Star Wars. And that's why I think it's such a success. What do y'all think?
I mean, it also broadens the universe, which is really nice by not having, as you said at the beginning, not having to tie into the lore, not having to be like, oh, we're using established characters. Right. Like, yeah, okay, we have
in the broadest sense of there is a rebellion.
Right,
but
exactly. But we're like, not like, we don't need to trot out Darth Vader. We don't need to trot out Ewan McGregor. We don't need to trot out.
The whole crew on the heist, the Andy Serkis characters, are all just new people to this thing. And when you have the freedom to just make new characters and you're a good writer, you can make good characters that people like.
That we care about.
I wondered if Disney kind of knows what to do with something that like, critics are very excited about and people are talking about, but is not a big hit. I'm kind of reminded of The Wire, which we're required to mention on every episode of The Complicated Profession, where it was like, this is the thing that people think is the greatest thing ever, but it took it a while for it to find an audience, and it never had a huge audience. It never won a ton of awards.
Well, I mean, the difference here is it is Star Wars,
it
right?
It is Star Wars.
Which is weird. I mean, that's the weird dichotomy.
I mean, and maybe it doesn't matter because this is a two-season show and then they're done, but in the grander picture of Star Wars, are they allowed to have a Star Wars show that's not a commercial popular hit that's getting whatever streaming numbers, right? I mean, is the numbers all that they care about? Or are they happy with a different type of success?
Part of it was the choice of what they did here. Like, he wanted to make a show about rebellion and fascism, and the place where that slots in is this part in Star Wars, and it is a good fit. But in the end, it is a kind of a bummer story.
But are they excited to have that on their shelf? Or are they you didn't move the action figures we needed. We're never doing that again.
But I feel like if you had someone who wanted to make, if you're going to make a show for adults that gets well-reviewed, that's not a death sentence. You can contrast The Wire with The Sopranos, which seemingly are both similar. Both shows for adults with, serious subject matter. But The Sopranos is just like 3 or 4 degrees off from The Wire, enough to get that sick dark comedy in there in with all the pathos and the drama, and just that little skew, because The Sopranos is not The Godfather. The Sopranos is not even Goodfellas, right? It is its own thing that was a phenomenal hit and also a really good show. And the only reason, like, The Wire was just a little bit too far, and I feel like Andor is in The Wire slot for sure, but you get like 3 degrees off of Andor.
Yeah,
the Star Wars
crime show.
It doesn't have to be crime, but I was like, you can make an artfully done, interesting adult show that is very much like Andor, but Andor, Andor is like, it feels like a lot of the media that I watch, like, oh, it's about the end of the world and everybody's sad. Like, that's for
everybody
me.
Dies.
Like, The Leftovers is never going to be super popular, but I love it, but it's not going to be the hit that Disney wants.
An element of deliberate alienation to a certain extent. Yeah. Like, I'm actually kind of trying not to be too popular.
Exactly.
I think this is good. I think it's good library content, though. That's one of the things that is different about the streaming world, is that in some ways it doesn't matter. I know that they will measure how many views in the first day or in the first week, in the first month, but like, it's also in the Disney Plus library under Star Wars forever.
Yeah.
People keep saying you have to watch it, like The Wire. Eventually you get Disney Plus, you can watch Andor. Yeah. Your friends keep telling
and
you.
And it's not like or you tell them Netflix. Shut up.
And it also
I'd be
accrues
more nervous if this was on Netflix.
Right. I mean, it helps that it's only going to do two seasons anyway. Yes. And then it also accumulates more value to Rogue One, which I think is also interesting and makes that a more valuable property for them. And they built a little streaming section in the Disney Plus app under Star Wars.
Wrote to anybody?
Yeah.
Oh, no, boy.
The most important thing you do is that hopefully everyone who works on this show now has it as a bullet point on their resume and has learned something from it and now has a higher chance of getting a job to do something else. And we know these people are good at doing it, so give these people jobs doing other things too.
And that Star Wars, again, the people running Star Wars look at it and go, we are capable of stuff like this.
Yeah.
Even if they don't, this is not a thing they're going to replay.
Yeah, right, exactly. Don't try to copy this
but
and
like,
copy-paste it, right?
I really do think they were at sea where they're like, well, we can make shows that are kind of like Star Wars,
the Obi-Wan and the Boba Fett show, that must have been the bigger crisis of faith. It was like, but it's Obi-Wan and Boba Fett. Everybody loves them. Why aren't these shows just like...
More
right,
Baby Yodas? Well, and I love The Mandalorian. I love The Mandalorian, but it is also... trying to hit the vibe of the original trilogy.
The later seasons more so. I feel like in the beginning, especially for the first few episodes of The Mandalorian, it was trying to be kind of its own thing and
more
a much more restrained
Western
kind of Western.
Western Cub
kind
of thing. More.
Right,
yeah.
but once that Baby Yoda shows up, it's like, all right, well, you're off.
We know the end of the first episode. Yeah.
I know what you mean, but like that's
but before
like,
that.
That's, no, yeah. even if like that's, so there's like
S1,
two,
E1,
two or three
first
or,
half.
Two or three or four episodes, like you see where this is going. Like you get the Baby Yoda, you know like the path that this is going. I mean, I don't think even I thought that it was going to end up where it ends up at the end of season one. It's like, really? You're going to go all the way there?
Yeah.
But they traveled that whole distance from like lone wolf, no dialogue for the entire episode.
But good show that is more about covering kind of some existing ground, and I would say existing kind of vibe of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so to have that and have it be successful and to look at Andor and say, okay, here's other things we can do. And knowing also that they have the Acolyte in production that is also sounds like a very different thing set in Star Wars
sounds,
that they are kind of getting an idea of what they can do with
this
franchise.
It's also a show that, like this show, has a driving creative force behind it. And
yes,
I think that's true.
Somebody with something to say.
I think it's true to a certain extent, like Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni wanted to make a certain show and they made that show. I don't know what the hell
with
Robert
a baby.
Rodriguez was doing. Possibly some drugs.
Not his best work.
And then Obi-Wan
work.
Is very much a studio joint where it's like, we're going to hire... Yeah. We got
Obi-Wan exists.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor wants to make this.
You love Obi-Wan. You will watch this.
Leia was once a child. Yes.
we owe Ewan McGregor
blood
money or something, and we'll let him make his show.
Hayden Christensen was available.
He did get raked over the coals, if I remember.
But, you know, I think that was like a show that was like the studio wanted to make that show, and they hired somebody who was very competent to make it, but it was not a show that had, it was not her.
No, Ewan wants to come back. Let's tell a story there. There's some groom. Let's do it.
We're not talking about Obi-Wan, John.
But what you want is somebody to come in and say, I have a story I want to tell in the Star Wars universe.
And
here's
why it's a good fit for Star Wars, because it's about fascism and rebellion.
Or about whatever the act
or whatever it could be. It would be about religion and its hold on your life, or whatever.
It's about Tatooine.
Right.
Oh, good.
Okay, well, let's come in and push you my show. It's about sand.
That's not a subject. Sand is a subject.
It gets rough. It's everywhere. All right.
Womp rat.
This
soon.
This has been delightful.
It's a horror movie.
To talk to all of you in person.
Subtitle. They're not much bigger than 3 minutes.
I'm just going to keep saying goodbye. It's been great to talk to you in person, and we had some laughs. We had some Chinese food before we started. We had two members of our audience who were only asleep for part of it, and we thank their patience.
Oh, thank you.
That's some quality Foley work.
And it's been fun to get together with my pals here in Massachusetts for this Star Wars themed episode, because who else would I have on but these Star Wars themed human beings? So let me say goodbye to them. It is John Syracusa, our own B2 emo.
The Incomparables tape before a live studio audience.
Dan Morin, also present. He died sadly during the Battle of Aldani.
But I can swim.
And Tony Sindelar.
We're all podcasting our own rebellion.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you again next time.